Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time, and we're really glad to be with you in these very tumultuous times. And we're going to get some geopolitical economic analysis here from our guest, Bob Kudla, who has proven accurate so far, and I hope his predictions will continue, because there may be some silver lining in the midst of all the dark clouds that we're being inundated with from the mainstream media. I mean, I have to go take a chill pill after I watch Fox for 40 minutes. It's depressing. Bob, welcome to the show. And we seem to have a little interference on that. Do you hear that?
Yeah, that's hope we can deal with it. Let me see if I can.
It's gone now.
Okay, good.
Okay. So anyway, we'd like to have smooth sailing, because if I don't get all the distractions done, then my audience so politely corrects me. So anyway, Bob, welcome to the show. And from talking to you in our pre-air discussion, my gosh, I think you put me in the best mood I've been in when I think about the economy in some time. So I'm really looking forward to our discussion here. But my gosh, let me just lay out what I told you before, and then I'll let you just take it where you want. We should have been producing oil all along, because we've known about the Ukrainian intentions from Putin, since last April, and we did nothing. We are allowing him to use oil to fund his war regime and killing innocent civilians. And now Iran, who says death to America, death to Israel, and they have ICBM capabilities. We are now using Russia to negotiate an oil deal with them that very well could fund their nuclear weapons program, I should say. That concerns me. Should I be concerned over this?
Yeah, so let's talk oil in general. Then we could talk Iran, Venezuela,
okay,
and Russia. So first of all, that dinging you're hearing was one of my algorithms firing, by the way.
Yeah, you're making money. That's good. That's the money sound.
It is the money sound. So reason why oil is going up has nothing to do with Ukraine. Ukraine was the excuse. It's basically an inflation hedge around the world. The only people that are having an energy crisis is Europe. And Europe's energy crisis is primarily natural gas, because if we learned any lesson, is listening to Greens and environmentalists are hazardous to the health of a nation, okay, because they were woefully unprepared for a supply shock. If it wasn't Russia, it would have been something else. And so basically everything is moving up in price because of governments overspending for years and years and years. The Ukraine crisis was an excuse to now they can blame that. If you notice, all the mantra is oil's up because of Ukraine, oil's up because of Ukraine. The United States has been ramping production like there's no tomorrow, and there's been no supply disruptions anywhere in the world, including Russia. Russia hasn't stopped producing oil at all, okay? They have oil sitting on tankers around the world trying to find a home, which they will find a home, because India, Pakistan, Brazil, okay, China have all basically the non-aligned have not aligned with the West's sanctions. So Russia will get their oil sold. It won't be as great a price as being produced in the futures markets, but they're going to get it done. And so it's really an inflation issue with oil. Now, what's fascinating to me is that the Biden administration is choking on having to increase production in the United States. So they're doing everything they can to replace this Russian oil with oil from another country, instead of saying, hey, we got to ramp up production, because they know if they don't ramp up production and they don't do a deal with these other countries, and if they try to shut production down again, the higher oil prices will sit squarely on the lap of the Biden administration, and the voters will absolutely punish them. I personally think they're going to get punished anyway. Everybody knows oil started going up the day Biden got elected or anointed, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, I hear you. I just want to interject just one observation here. I think the retribution politically has already started, and I'll point to two things. There were 10 candidates that Trump endorsed for primary elections, and 9 of them won, and there's a runoff for another one in which his candidate that he endorsed is the number one vote getter. And then number two, in the Democratic primary for judges in Harris County, which is Houston, all 10 incumbents were defeated by Democratic voters in Democratic districts. So even the Democrats are rebelling against the status quo.
Well, the whole Rio Grande Valley is they've had more Republican votes than they've ever had. So.
Yes. So I think that's already I think your observation there is right. But I think we see the beginnings of it now. It's like the opening stanza to the music for Jaws when the shark is approaching its targets. I think the Democrats should be hearing that music loud and clear by now.
Yeah, and just so you know, and you and I have talked about this before, people can look up past shows, is that I said we had a measured move for oil to 120 when it was trading in the 50s.
Oh, yes, you did. Yeah, you
and
did.
And we hit 127 or something overnight, and we fell back to 120. So I think right now oil is probably as high as it's going to go unless there's another shock coming out of the blue here in the near term, and we should see a pretty good pullback in oil. It's just the nature of derivatives. We won't have time to get into all it here. The nature of derivatives is such that producers now are going to lock in this price, and they lock in by selling futures contracts. So at some point, you're going to have a waterfall effect that they're going to have to they'll overwhelm the buy orders. And then once the people that have been buying oil in speculation realize, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get blown up here, they start selling too. So you'll get a we're going to get one of these really weird couple weeks where it'll go from 120 down to 90 again, something like that. So we're looking for that. And then you and I can talk in the future where oil is going to go if they don't keep production up. But that's just one aspect of it. This whole thing's on the Biden administration because not only this went up, but they didn't foresee the rise in nuclear. Okay, they didn't foresee the rise in fertilizer. They haven't seen the rise in food prices. Is that they've taken no course of action on this stuff. And I think they thought it was going up a little bit. They can keep their agenda intact. But markets and life don't work that way, and it overwhelmed them. So we now have hit where oil's probably going to top out. Fertilizer prices are probably going to top out here. But food prices, Dave, for the next 6 to 9 months, there will be countries around the world that will go into a food deficit where, you know, it'll be a failed state. And that's primarily North Africa area. And even potentially countries like Turkey and India, if they can't maintain their production, you know, there's going to be a world of hurt. And it's going to happen somewhere in that part of the world where they have to import Russian wheat. Okay. Because Ukraine's probably offline for wheat production this year, even if they come to a peace treaty, which they might, is that I think you're going to see a wheat coming out of that part of the world is going to come down, and they're the marginal producer of wheat in the world. Just so people know, Russia is the marginal producer of palladium, wheat, fertilizer, oil, natural gas. Ukraine and Russia together are like 25-30% of steel production.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so people think that, hey, this is going to be a clean, quick kill on Russia. It's one of those things we may shoot each other in the head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. I've been saying the same thing. Hey, I did want to ask you, though, about the food shortages. I went through and I listed 7 things. I won't go through them all in an article I recently wrote. But one of them is fertilizer availability. If Russia cuts it off, it's 13% of our total supply. And then you've got the inflation factor with fertilizer. And I have farmers telling me that they're anticipating not being able to afford to be able to fertilize entire fields. So they'll be leaving more of their fields dormant in a rotation strategy basis. But that means less food yield. Transportation costs will increase the cost of food to market. So sorry about all the detail, but just to sum it up, won't that impact, say, the lower 25-30% of Americans economically and make getting enough food problematic?
Yeah, not in the United States. So the United States is blessed with a square country, okay? What I mean by that is it has a lot of depth latitudinally and longitudinally, which means that food can be grown in a lot of different areas in a lot of different climate environments. The beautiful thing about wheat and barley is that it's not as nutrient dependent as corn is. So if we're going to look for issues around corn. Corn requires a lot of fertilizer. Okay, so if you can't get corn in the ground and you can't get soybeans in the ground because of fertilizer, you're going to roll to wheat, you're going to roll to barley. So, you know, there's no accident the Bible says don't harm the oil in the grape, right? But people are going to be working all day for basically a measure of barley, because barley is relatively easy to grow. So farmers, a lot of these farmers will put wheat in the ground if they can't get the fertilizer for corn. The good news for this year for the United States is over 50% of the farmers had already purchased fertilizer before this crisis, and they were buying all the way up until the export cut from Russia. So I would say 75 to 80% of the farmers, and I have this from a really good source. So I have a customer who's in this business, and so probably we're okay this year. But if they don't get their act together next year for the United States, then it's going to become problematic. But you're going to see a shift. And what that means with corn goes, corn's in a lot of products, Dave. So you're looking at probably higher pig prices, higher prices for chickens, you know, for eggs. And that, Dave, will start affecting the lower end of the scale. And I think what will happen to American people is that, you know, they're used to eating a high-carbohydrate diet.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be forced onto vegetables. Okay?
That'll be good. That'll be good for diabetes and obesity.
That wasn't the good news I was referring to with you, but
yeah.
I told my wife, I was laughing the other day, I said, the United States might be going on a forced keto diet.
Yeah, we laugh, but that actually it's very accurate. Boy, there's a lot of meat there, and just what you said, no pun intended, but to me, I look at this whole situation involving the food supply, though, and with inflation, you know, the cost of shipping food to market is problematic. I don't see how the lower echelon in our society can't afford, I mean, how they can afford the food supply as they're currently enjoying it. Are you saying the answer to that is to shift what you're eating?
Well, that's what's going to happen. That's always happens. There's going to be substitute. But look, they're going to, and the Republicans won't oppose it because they don't want to lose the election, but they'll raise the price for food stamps. Okay, so it's the middle class that usually gets screwed here. So, but yeah, so the poor will just they'll just raise the price of how much you know, nutritional subsidies they get.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I'm hearing too, and I don't believe this, so I want to take this to you. There are a number of people who are saying the market's going to collapse and collapse soon. And I know that you deal in the market with Trade Genius, the company you own and operate. How's this affecting you? I mean, do you disagree with the assertion the market's in big trouble? Because I do.
Yeah, well, because, you know, it's basically, as we talked about before, it's really more rotation. So, you know, where tech and finance are getting hammered, the commodity markets have well taken over the slack. Look, we've been in oil, gas, fertilizer, uranium. Well, you and I, we were talking about this for 18 months. So we're well positioned in that regard. Today was the first time I sold out all my fertilizer positions. We wrote IPI and Mosaic up to incredible heights. So I rolled out of it, even in my IRA, until the fall, until the next buying season coming up. And oil's going to top out too. So for the summer. And so I'll be trimming some of my energy positions. But then I'm rolling into food, and I'm rolling into silver and gold because the Fed now is behind the curve. So yeah, so I hate when people say the market's going to crash, because you don't trade the market, you trade stocks in the market.
Exactly.
So yeah. You need to just constantly be adjusting your positioning. And look, you know, we shorted Moderna, you know, not just because it's an evil company, it's because it's a one-trick pony. And, you know, Putin's going to win the peace prize for getting rid of COVID in 1 week, right? So,
yeah, so for the censors, he's joking when he says that. But you're absolutely right. Putin's position on this has been really interesting.
Yeah, so you know, we look at that, and then there's another tech company out there called SARK, which is shorting these innovative tech companies. Well, we rode that to the moon. And then we're riding the DWAC with social media up. It's been trading really well, and it gives us a lot of opportunity. So My point
before
is,
before you go on, can I stop you just for a second? You brought up DWAC, and I don't want to lose this.
Yeah.
I would like to have signed up for this, but I have an Android. DWAC doesn't take Androids. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's probably a matter of time. You know, I had a company, we had apps. Yep. Sometimes you have to get the one app up and running before you get the other app up and running. So they could be just going through a process where they're getting it approved. So, but, okay. You know, just like you go with the Gorilla first, right? Apple Pie has more embedded base users, so they went there first.
So people, when you advise them, they say, Bob, what's your opinion on the market and stuff? I'm hearing you say, you just need to know what you're doing with regard to how you're investing, but the market will still be there and be viable for those that know what they're doing. Is that a fair interpretation?
Yeah, there's always a bull market somewhere. Even the Great Depression, people made a lot of money. It's just the people that were wrong-footed with leverage are the ones that got hammered. But, you know, okay. If you know, look, you know, and I'll give you an example. So my wife's family was in Ohio. They owned a farm. They're Germans, right? So they had no debt. And he was in the funeral business. Okay, so he never even saw the Depression. Okay, their farm did well, and obviously people kept dying. So so you know, and I only make that point is that there's always something, and you know, Roosevelt raised the price of gold during that period of time, so people that owned Homestake Mining made a fortune. So, you know, there's always an opportunity. In 2008, when the market fell 50%, if you just had long bonds, if you're just a bondholder, you doubled your money. So I always get people, don't worry about the market crashing. Just look what you have inside your trade. And you know, if you don't trade with somebody like with me, and you have a portfolio. Don't make sure your guy's not loading you up with all these ETFs. You need to have some stock exposure, okay, to do well. Like my wife, she has her own portfolio, long-term IRA. You know, she's energy, biotech, and now she also owns farm machinery stuff. So that's another thing. You're looking at Caterpillar. You're looking at Deere. So there's always opportunities. Food stocks, you know, Farmer Brothers, FPI. You want to own farmland in the United States? Buy FPI. So there's all these opportunities. And even if we go into the depression, is what I would call the inflationary depression. We talked about this before.
Yes.
Where prices stay high, it's just your ability to afford them falls away. So it's kind of like a weird, it's like a mirage. It looks like things are well for many people. You got to remember, during the Great Depression, 75% of the nation was still working, Dave. So, you know, it's not like everything winks off. So you just have to know where the money's going to flow and where it's going to be supported, and you're going to do just fine. And I don't really care. I cheat, so I just use my algorithm. I have my own biases, but if the algorithm's not supporting them, then I look elsewhere. And you can't help but make money.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear you say this, because I'll give you an example. At the college I was coaching at, and I was teaching there too part-time, they brought in this economist, and I'll never forget what she said. She said, even in the Depression, people made money in the stock market, and she started talking about household products like baking soda, for example, toothpaste. She said, you're still going to make money on that because people need it. And she said, if you look at what people need and use every day, that's going to be a baseline of how you're going to make money in the market. And she was very bullish market. She's saying just what you said. And she said this 20 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. But she said that if you can find the bull market there, you're going to make money. And that's what you're saying, too. So these prognostications, Chicken Little's coming and the market's going to collapse and Wall Street will be no more. Yeah, that's a bunch of nonsense.
No, the bankers are making money hand over fist right now because they're you know, they knew this war was coming. So they're positioning it. You know, they tell the politicians what to do. They don't find out what the politicians are doing. So they're always well positioned.
Yeah, so. That's true. And sometimes they determine where the politicians go. Yeah. You're an ex-military guy. How far do you think our involvement's going to go in the situation? Do you have any guess?
You know, I think we're going to – I doubt we're going to get overt, because you don't know where that can end up going. But obviously – you know, if you put a gun to my head, is I know we have CIA agents on the ground. I know we probably have contractors on the ground. There's probably Delta Force on the ground. You know, the British have SAS on the ground. So, so I think we're in there. We may not be pulling the triggers, but we're showing these guys how to use some of these weapons that are pouring across the border into Ukraine. You know, the thing about it is, I want to offer an opinion on how well the Russians are and are not doing, but this is the only televised war that we're getting no information from, which kind of is
well, we're seeing the same civilians killed over and over, as tragic as that is.
Yeah.
I watch Fox News, I've seen the same news clips 9 and 10 times.
Yeah, so my view is that Russia has achieved their objective. So they wanted to solidify Crimea. They now, Crimea is not now isolated. And they got the two other breakaway regions under their control. And they've done considerable damage to the Ukrainian infrastructure. So at any point, Russia could pull back to those areas and be in a forward posture and declare for peace. Because at some point, these sanctions on Russia will come off, because the world needs their stuff, no matter how much we want to say it doesn't. And so I personally think, and if I was president, I wouldn't be really trying to escalate the war anymore. I would continue to put pressure on China, actually. I would remind the Chinese that escalation is not in their best interest, because if they damage Europe in any way, shape, or form, it's going to damage the ability for China's economy to survive. And just you just point out food to them, just saying, look, Hungary just ended their exports, and it's going to every country in the world is going to ban export of their food. And who's the biggest importer of food in the world? China. Okay, and Russia can't just pivot. Russia's not stupid either. They're not going to give away all their surplus, because they may not know if they're going to have a crop the following year, right? Because, you know, their equipment. So it's going to be really – it's now I think we're reaching 4D chess on this stuff. Things aren't as simple as they can be. We don't have to do it. You know, I think we forced Russia into this position. I think we want to bury their nose in it. And we very may well have destroyed the Russian economy. I just don't know what that's going to mean in future years. But I know at least near term is that we don't have to do anything more at this point. We just have to make sure that we can counter any blow that Russia is going to give us that are going to be asymmetrical.
You mean like a cyber takedown attempt?
Cyber is one thing, yeah. Or they can... we can have dirty bombs going off. We can have, you know, they don't have to be these big things like you saw on the TV shows, right? But, you know, if you start doing radiation leaks, small radiation leaks around Wall Street and around the Capitol, right? They don't have to be big, but enough to cause massive panicking, you know, and disruption. There's a lot of things that can be done short of a hot war and short of nuclear that could cause great. Look, they could drop a, they could do an EMP pulse. Okay.
I don't think they'll do that though.
A lot of things can happen.
Do you really think? I think that would be. I don't even think China would do that, because
it doesn't have to be nationwide. But they can blame the Ukrainians. See, the Ukrainians set themselves up where they look at the radiation leak story in the nuclear plant, right? So Zelensky's huffing and puffing to blow the house down. And now Russia's setting it up all the time. They're protecting themselves like what we were trying to do to Russia before the war. They're saying, hey, these guys are trying to set up a wag the dog. Hey, it wouldn't be beyond the Ukrainians to do something in the United States to force us against Russia. So there's so much mud in the soup right now that that some of these things could slip in. That's my only pause. I must say none of that stuff will happen. But people need to be aware of these things can happen.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. But I don't see an EMP. I do see a potential for cyber takedown. And the reason being is both China and Russia need the United States economically. An EMP, if it was nationwide, would be so catastrophic, if right off the U.S. for trading with them, but a cyber attack you could recover from. I mean, that's that to me, at least that's how I see it. I used to think EMP was a real danger, but I don't now. Not from China and Russia. Now, Iran, different story.
Well, see, and you can blame the Iranians and this stuff because, you know, they're Shia. They're waiting for the 12th Mahdi to come, right? So ending the world is actually a good thing for them. So, but EMPs don't have to be nationwide either, Dave. They could be extremely localized. So, but my only point was is that people just think we're going to go from this to nuclear. No, there's many, 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 many steps along the way. So,
if we did introduce jets to Ukraine, and I do believe that we will at some point, and I'm even hearing that from my sources, Poland is going to do it regardless of what Biden does. So let's say Poland does it or some conglomeration of nations, and the effort in Ukraine turns south for Russia because they no longer have mostly dominance over the skies, and now Russian forces are really at risk, and the body count's going way up. The war is now unpopular, it's too expensive, and it's Afghanistan part two. I'm wondering if Putin wouldn't resort to tactical nukes. What's your opinion on that?
He doesn't have to. He could just send some of his hypersonic missiles through the Parliament of Warsaw.
Oh, boy. That would escalate the whole thing.
Yeah, and then what are you going to do? We still can't attack them. So, you know, because Russia will just say, if an American forces come over, we're going to meet them with tactical nukes. So, you know, but yeah, he could harm them. So, Russia is far from defeated. We don't even know what equipment they sent in there. They could have sent in their B team and their C team. You know, we don't know. We can't get a look at the stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But I think that, do you think that Putin believed he could run through Ukraine in 3 days?
I don't think that was ever his thing. We say that because we're trying to make him look like a loser. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not a Putin apologist. I know that, you know, we're really good at narrative setting here in this country, right? So we set up a straw man. If Putin can't get to Kiev in 3 days, it's a failure. Well, you know, I don't know what his plan is. You don't know what his plan is. You know, nobody knows what his plan is. So, you know, all I know is he accomplished what he set out to do so far. Kiev is not necessarily an objective for him. Kiev just ties up the Ukrainian forces defending Kiev. And he's able to take the provinces that he wanted down in the south. And
in the Black Sea area. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's his classic. If he takes Odessa, that basically Ukraine's cut off from the Black Sea. They can only get to the markets by going overland to Romania. Okay. Because Moldova is essentially a Russian proxy, no matter what they say.
Does Russia depend on Ukraine for pass-through for sale of natural gas into Europe?
They have a couple pipelines running through the Ukraine.
That's what I thought. Could the Black Sea strategy to shut them off from the ocean be, let's say, used to negotiate a better deal with the pipelines running through Ukraine?
You sound like a Russian.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, it sounds like a Russian negotiating tactic to me, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I would think, too. That's how they do business. But here's the thing that where I think Putin may have gone off script. He's now I know we got to be careful not to buy into the mainstream media narrative, but I think the evidence is pretty good. He's encircling cities and pummeling them and mounting civilian casualties. World opinion turning against him. I mean, is this happening in the way the mainstream media is describing? Is Putin deliberately killing civilians?
I don't know. There's probably a little bit on both. But, I mean, what more can the West do to Russia that they haven't already done? I mean, they basically cut them out of the financial system. They cut them out of the economic system. They basically told to the people they can't leave the country. I don't know what's left. I don't know what card is left to play. So Putin feels totally like, you know how it is when you have nothing left to lose, right?
Yeah, right.
So he's like, hey, what more can they do to me? So I'm gonna press for every advantage I can for the negotiation. So that's why I said that the negotiations need to be with China, not with Russia. You got to use the Chinese, because Chinese are the only people that really have leverage on Russia.
That's because Russia is using them as a safety valve for trade since they're cut off?
Yeah, not just them. Look, Pakistan is trading with, India's trading with them, and China's trading with them. That's more than 60% of the world population still trading with Russia.
Well, what about Latin America? I would imagine they are too.
Brazil's still trading with them. Venezuela's still trading with them. Okay, those are the two biggest countries in South America. I guarantee you if somebody dangled money in front of Argentina, they would move in a minute. You know, so, and Latin America is irrelevant to me. It's really, Brazil's the dog down there. And Venezuela, that's why do you think they went down there to talk to the Venezuelans to try to move them from the orbit, you know? So, and Iran, I was going to get to that. You know, Iran and Saudi Arabia now are discussing a rapprochement, okay? So I find that fascinating. And so, you know, we'll see where a lot of this stuff goes.
Here's my major concern, too. Russia is brokering a deal between the U.S. and Iran. I'm vehemently opposed to that because Iran can't be trusted under any circumstances. Russia has built-in restraints they got to follow. China, to some degree, does, too. Iran has no restraints. They're crazy. I mean, there's nothing that they wouldn't do if they had the capability. And so what I'm wondering here is Iran builds up. Wouldn't that invite Israel saying, oh, no, we're not going to have a nuclear-enhanced Iran, and they attack them? Do you think that could happen?
Oh, the Israelis have said as much, and I take them at their word.
I do, too. They don't mess around.
They can't afford to.
No, I agree. So why would the Biden administration agree to a strategy that would start a war in the Middle East? And if Israel attacks Iran, Russia will attack Israel. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah, the Biden administration is actually pro-Iranian, right? Susan Rice. So, they hate Israel and they love Iran. So, so that's kind of their ilk. That's what they're going for.
I get so angry when I think about this because they're playing with hundreds of millions of lives.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that's their plan. Maybe these people are – it's a spiritual war we're dealing with, Dave.
With Iran, I believe that.
Well, I'm talking about our people.
Yeah, I know. Where's the spiritual part of it for them?
Well, there's two spirits, right? There's the spirit of God and the spirit of Satan.
I knew you were going to go there when I asked that question. Okay. And I don't disagree with you, my friend. I believe that, too. And I have said in my moments of rage towards this administration, I have said, you know, you have a choice in this planet. You can serve Jesus or you can serve Satan. There is no middle ground. And I said, you decide which one our leaders are serving primarily. And you know, I asked this question today of a friend of mine who's a prepping expert, Bob Griswold. And I asked Bob, I said, do you think the 38 out of 50 governors that have been identified that are strongly influenced by China, do you think that they know who they're really serving in the bottom common denominator, meaning Satan? And he said, I think some, not most. What would be your answer to that question?
Well, I think a lot of these people are very self-centered and narcissistic and psychopathic. So
they
look, these people think that they know all the right answers and that we're the idiots and they're gonna herald in a better world, you know. So but look, I don't know, you know, we're not invited to those kind of meetings, which are probably kind of scary in and of itself, occultic. So yeah, so I wouldn't doubt a lot of those people are even overtly engaged.
It's the first time you and I have touched on this subject in all the interviews we've done, and I happen to 100% agree with you. I think it's as much a spiritual war as it is a physical war.
Yeah, I mean, look, we live in the physical world, and there's only so much we can do. You know, because people always ask me why I'm so calm about it. Well, number one, I can't do anything about it. Number two, I've already made my decision. So my salvation is secure. And other than that, you know, I get to live on this earth, you know, so I try to make the best of it as I can, but you have to understand what you're dealing with. And when you get frustrated, you have to understand, you know, you're dealing with things that are beyond your control in many cases. So, but I don't, you know, look, I just, Psalm 2 is my guide. People can look it up. Okay, from the Old Testament, it's my favorite verse in the Old Testament is where God just sits in the heaven and he laughs derisively as the nations rage. So he's in control, you know, and he just shakes his head. He knows we won. So I just don't worry about that. Then I just focus on my day-to-day. And, you know, my gift is like yours. I'm an educator. You're an educator. And I just happen to have an ability to help people make money in the stock market. And that's kind of what I do. And I use my gifts to my best advantage for my subscribers.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I find myself in a similar position. Although I'm not really helping people make money, I think a lot of my work helps people save the money they've made.
And, well, Ben Franklin, money saved is money earned.
Yeah, well, you know, he had something else to say, too, that's come to my mind a lot. Well, what kind of government is it, Mr. Franklin? It's a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental question today in my book, because the Democrats, they haven't just practiced cancel culture with regard to censorship. It's cancel everything. They've tried to turn our way of life totally upside down, inside out. And sometimes I think what they're doing is so nutty, the only reason they're doing it, it's for the sake of change.
Yeah, look, here's my bottom line strategy on there's really two entities out there in the world right now. There's what I would consider the globally affiliated people. They tend to be progressives, highly educated people, lack common sense, don't understand human nature, and they wish to control humans. So they figure if they could control the means of production and the means of survival, they can change your behavior and create a society of their making, you know, i.e. I call it the Hunger Games, right? So that's kind of their view, is that we're the overlords, we know what's best, you're going to serve us. And then there's the nationalists, right? And you know, people like, you know, Trump, I would consider myself a nationalist. It's my country first, my tribe first. You know, most people that aren't in that progressive group feel that way. Now, look, do I want the world to cooperate? Sure. So I'm not like this hardcore guy. Either probably are you. Obviously, you know, we got to care for the ocean. We got to care for this, care for that. Things we have in common. Sure. You know, but that's the battle. And so, you know, technology has allowed the progressive movement to gain more power per their population than they otherwise would. So now, you know, Justin Trudeau flexed right a month ago just to show you how a small group of people can flex and control the whole country, right? So, but what they don't realize is there's always a flex back, okay? And that usually tends to overwhelm them because they're not really good at when the counterattack happens. And I think that's what's happening right now politically. So the national movement, I wouldn't even call it the right. There's a lot of people on the left that consider themselves country first too, okay? You know, I would call it the liberal, right? They're not necessarily globalists. They're liberal. They want to have fairness and all this stuff in the world. Well, they've been on their heels. Well, they just got flexed back, okay? And I think you're going to see that in the United States in 2022 is that you're going to see the flex back. I think Canada's going to see it too. And that's when you're going to, I think, it's going to put the progressive movement on their heels. And then we'll set up for the what I call the final countdown, you know, in the out years. But I think there's going to be a counter revolution in terms of political activity between now and, let's say, 2028.
I think it's coming sooner. I do agree with what you said.
No, it's starting now. But I mean, there'll be an ascendancy for the next 6 years.
Do you think there's anything that the Democrats can do to change around what I think is a very bleak political future come this November?
Not legally.
Well, that's true. Dictators seize power when they know they're not going to win an election, and I wouldn't put that past these people. I don't think there's any reversal possible, and I think you just echoed that. They've cast their die. I want to talk to you about, because most Americans aren't even aware of this. Biden has allowed, and I can't believe I'm using these words, has allowed, who the hell is he, to enter into private enterprise, but he has allowed oil production to resume in certain markets. Will things, to save face, will he still stay away from things like the Keystone Pipeline?
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi said as much. So they're not going to allow public lands. They're not going to allow Keystone Pipeline. You know, I think they'll probably get away with it until the midterms, because I think, like I said, we'll see an abatement, short-term abatement on oil prices here, coming soon. And then I think after the election, they're going to probably have to abate. The good news, remember we were talking about the good news? The good news now is that Germany is out of Russia's orbit, which is politically great news. Number two is that the rise of nuclear, and I own a renewable energy company. I own a green energy company, so I'm not opposed to renewable energy. It's that everything has its place, right? So, but nuclear has been always, I don't know why we haven't gone balls out on nuclear. You're going to see a renaissance in nuclear technology and nuclear rollout, and that's going to stabilize energy prices. You can't have a strong economy with high energy prices. I know the Greens want that because that's how they can control people, but that's how you stay in a depression mode for forever. So you're going to see nuclear become the dominant energy growth in this country. Oil and gas aren't going anywhere because you need oil and gas for more than just transportation. But, you know, it's going to be 30 to 40 years before all that phases out.
Yeah, here's what I didn't understand. When I saw Biden doing what he was doing with the energy sector, I'm saying, okay, if I take an aerial view from a high altitude, I agree with transitioning into clean energy. I agree with the transitioning into things like electric cars or something equivalent. I do agree with that, and I would welcome a change away from oil. But these morons, these jackasses, didn't even allow for a transition period where I think they've tried to force it upon us.
Well, that's just the nature of the left. They, you know, the right, you know, conservatives are called conservatives for a reason. You know, they're step-by-step methodical. They're reactionary, right? They react, whereas the left tends to create the chaos. They figure they have to make these moves in basically breaks. They have to break human nature. So that's why they do this. You know, they're very rarely successful. They just end up causing more chaos, but that's just their human nature to do it that way. So yeah, so they try to cause this chaos, and then the American people are winding them back right now. Cause look, Biden is getting totally blamed on high energy prices. They can't spin this one way, shape or form. No. Psaki's out there every day trying to explain all the good things they're doing for in the oil space where people aren't buying it. All they know is Orange Man oil was $2.50. You know, Crazy Man oil's at $6. Okay? That's all people are. People are very simple. You know, somebody pointed out in a blog post yesterday, it was great. When we had an outsider in, we had low food prices, low energy prices, and no war. And then when the crazy people got back in establishment, we have war, high energy prices, high food prices, and lockdowns.
Bingo.
So people... That is a simple advertising message the Republicans need to put out on every campaign, and people get that. And so, yes, but that's what's going to stabilize everything. You're going to see that. And the other thing that's going to happen with all this is Thomas Friedman's flat earth is gone, Dave. Okay, it's gone. So you're going to see more onshoring. Now, will it bring wage pressure up? Yeah, but I don't care. So you have wage pressure up, you may have more inflation, but everything's being produced here. I don't know about you, but I don't want my wife's insulin being produced in China. Okay?
Exactly. Yeah. In fact,
you know, that's scary stuff. And just wait, my wife's type 1. Okay. So, you know, she's in perfect health and control, but she'll die in 30 days if she doesn't get insulin. Okay. And so, you know, those are the kind of things that, where I consider are treasonous, to put the American people's lives at immediate risk because of basically try to arbitrage a couple percentage points in the market. But that stuff's ending. So now it's just a matter of how fast they come in. And if China and Taiwan ever go at it, the Taiwanese are going to take out that dam. And that with that dam goes our tech sector and goes our medical sector, as well as China. So, you know, these things need to be we need to rectify. And Biden had to say so in the State of the Union message. So I think we already won. It's pretty funny. Somebody joked. They said all Biden needed to do was just read Trump's State of the Union message.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know. I totally agree with that. And some of America is dumb enough they would have accepted it. Yeah. You know, you said something that was very profound, and I want to give you credit, so I'm not going to let you skip over it and not take credit. When you said that the Democrats are the party of inflicting pain to get what they want, and I remember Zbigniew Brzezinski, the ultimate globalist, one of the major players, you know, who was one of the co-founders of the Trilateral Commission with David Rockefeller, and he wrote a book called The Technotronic Era Between Two Ages, and he said that when humans go through a transitory period, you know, like agrarian to industrial and industrial to post-industrial and so forth, he said there's great suffering for 20 years. And he was a Democrat. And that's what they believed, that you could do a transition that would be orderly, like you just talked about. But he expressed that in his book, that all hell will break loose when we make a transition like this. And that's why Biden's fine with cutting off our oil, where we can't afford to drive, but then we have nothing to take its place.
Yeah, but he has a small problem. When people can't go to work, GDP collapses.
Exactly.
And he gets blamed.
Yeah. I know.
I understand you know, when you go from farm, look, the farmers lose their job before they get hired by the factories. I understand that. So this is really more self-inflicted, purposeful self-inflicted wounds, you know.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Well, let's put this to the practical application part of this in the interview. Okay. I'm going to tell you, I think the people that will hear this broadcast, they're going to walk away right now with an air of optimism that they didn't have before. And I understand if it's cautious optimism, because we've been through a lot. But I think we've got a period of optimism here. But I wanted to talk about how you're applying this optimistic attitude towards your business with regard to Trade Genius.
Yeah, so we're like water. You know, we just go where the money's going. And so we knew Biden administration was going to cause energy prices. We started there. And then you go downstream from there. And then with the Russian situation heating up, we knew what Russia exports. So we started buying into those sectors. So we've been making a lot of money on uranium and fertilizer, and now we're starting to shift into silver, platinum, palladium, and into the food sector. And so we just simply use our algorithm. And for people, if you let me do a quick plug here. So we have 7 different bundles depending on what algorithm you want to trade. And if you want to trade stocks, you want to trade cryptos, or you want to trade futures or be in a VIP room with us, is that we're going to help you be on the right side of the trade. Our algorithm looks at ranges, it looks at momentum, and we teach you how to use it. It's not a black box. We give you access to it so that you can pick and choose the trades that you want to take. You have access to communicate with us in chat rooms, and then I also put trades out every day. And I threw you some attaboys. I mean, I told people last week we saw buying momentum going into RIG, which is an energy name. People got in it at 355 to 370. That was 3 days ago. It just closed out between 5 and 520. Okay? We've been telling people since $18 to get into Mosaic. It hit $64 today.
Wow.
Okay, so you know, we help people make a lot of money being in the right stuff. And so if you want to trade with us, you can use a bundle 65% off, pre-discount it, or you can use promo code Patrick for St. Patrick's Day,
right,
and you get 40% off, and you just have to take advantage of it by Saturday, which I think it's the 13th, if I'm not mistaken.
We're going to hit that before we close. Yeah. I want to read something first, okay? Because you brought this up, and then you quickly moved off because you're too modest. This is from one of your members in Trade Genius from Tennessee. I've learned a lot about options trading since joining this group. I'm now consistently making $2,000 each week. Thanks for providing this service, which allows me to be a stay-at-home mom. I'll never return to corporate America again and be a wage slave. That's pretty dramatic. That's and I've looked at these and here are just some Bob, thanks for the rig. And you just talked about what rig was. It's amazing here. I'm looking at the margin profits here that these people are mentioning. Just rig. And people are just ecstatic over what's going on. And then let me pull up one more here. There was one. This changed my life. Blah, 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 blah. Was having trouble making ends meet. This is really good testimonial stuff here. But I wanted to ask you. Okay, so someone's saying, okay, I want to do what Bob Kudla's doing, okay, and I want to learn from the best because he's making money. And let me ask you this before we go further. Return on investment, what is it for this year so far?
Oh, I have to look it up, but we're probably closing in on 200%.
No. Yeah. 20% is great. It's out of sight.
Yeah, just so you know, my personal portfolio since the beginning of January, I'm up 120%.
Oh my gosh.
So, and I trade the same stuff I put out. I may trade it at different levels or different size and stuff like that. But for the most part, people are tracking along with me on that trade. So right now we're at the, this is a 2.5 year average of 168.89% annualized. We're 65% percentage wins. But I mean, just, you know, RIG was a 17.5% gainer. You know, CCJ is my biggest position. We're up 6% on that, on this current trade. You know, we, you know, I sent you the portfolio. You can see it. People go on the website and see all our trades. But yeah, we're just really consistent. The key thing about making money is being consistent. So we're very consistent. We watch our losses, you know, because I don't always win, obviously. And so you take your lumps and you move on fast, but you let your winners run, and you just keep rinse and repeat, and you're going to make a lot of money in the market over time. And it doesn't really matter what the market is. So people have been calling for a crash for the last 2 years. The market's still near all-time highs, and even if it crashes, I have stuff you can buy and let it crash. Okay, so I don't really care. I care for the health of our nation, but I don't care from a stock standpoint. I'm going to make money. I don't care what it does.
Yeah, because there's always a bull market, as you said.
Yep.
Which is absolutely incredible. Are you still winning 2 out of 3 trades?
Yeah, we're 64.75% win rate.
You know, I know why regular brokers aren't achieving your status of success, and that's because they're worried about getting sued. One size fits all, and they're, you know, and they just apply the same rules to everybody. And this is one of the big criticisms I hear, but you don't care about that stuff, do you? You just care about the results, the end score.
Yeah, because that's all I can control, right? So, you know, you live a legal, moral life, right? You use your gifts to your best advantage. And, you know, I can't boil the ocean, so I just try to make sure my part of it's all cleaned up.
Okay, so I want to go through here. The people saying, okay, I want to do Trade Genius. Am I correct in saying the entry point is coming in and you get into an education mode with the bundles? The bundled items are, what, 65% off, and the non-bundled items are 40% off, and the coupon code is Patrick. But is that the only way to get in, is to come in and learn the education part and then get started?
Oh, yeah. Actually, you do everything at one time. So when you join, you have access to the educational tools, how we trade our system, how to use the indicators. That's all part of the package when you come in. And then the very next day, you can take a trade that I'm giving out. Very next day, you have access to the chat room. So you, you know, I would say a couple days, you're ready to roll. To understand our system, it may take 4 to 6 weeks to get all the lingo down and get your questions asked. Even if you're brand new, you know, you can just follow along the trades that we put out there first, until you get your feet underneath you and start getting confident in the system and getting confident in yourself, and you're ready to roll. And it doesn't matter. We trade crypto, we trade stock, we trade the futures market.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, yeah, in some areas, the world may be going to hell in a handbasket, but the calm in the storm is right here with Trade Genius. And I'd encourage people that are looking for second incomes and not relying on their primary income that they need to take a look. So that coupon code again is Patrick. That offer expires this Saturday. Bob, thanks so much for joining us and the excellent insight as to world events.
Dave, thanks for having me.
You take care.
Bye-bye.